Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. Later on in the programme, I will be talking to Imelda Walsh from the IFA. I will be talking to Paul Smith from the Irish Cream and Milk Suppliers Association. And my final guest this morning will be a veterinary surgeon, and his name is Tommy Heffernan. My first guest this morning is Joe Kelleher from Chagas, and Joe is an organic advisor. Joe, you're welcome to Ag Report on Tip FM. Right, Joe, organics is something that is a niche side of agriculture. So what should people who are interested, or farmers who are interested in going organic, what should they be thinking about and what should they be doing? I know they opened up the organic scheme sometime during 2021. Is that going to be opened up again?
Yeah, we're hoping that it'll be opened up, Jim, either the end of this month or early February. Mr. Hackett announced in the autumn there at the Farm Box that it is due to open up. So there has been no formal announcement date, but we expect that'll happen very, very soon. So we do anticipate a scheme will be up and running in early February anyway. As regards to what farmers should do, I suppose there's a couple of steps really farmers need to go through if they're contemplating organic. And the first thing is, there's two things that need to be converted. One is the farmer and one is the farm. So the first thing is the farmer has to get their head around the whole concept of organics, and they have to decide if organics is suitable for them and suitable for their mindset, and whether they can work within the system. Organics, like you're obviously, you can't spread any chemical fertilizers, you can't use any chemical sprays. So you're farming more with nature, and you have to ask yourself, can you see yourself farming in that way? Are you already maybe farming in that way? And is this maybe a natural progression to add on to what you're already doing? And I suppose the second step then is the farm needs to be converted, and there's a whole heap of things depending on the sector you're in that you need to look at, from the housing requirements to stocking rates to if it's crops to how you're going to manage weed control and things like that that have to be to be considered. And then I suppose the next step is you join the organic, well, I suppose before you join the organic farming scheme, you have to talk to one of the certification bodies. There's two certification bodies in Ireland. There's the Organic Trust and there's the Irish Organic Association. They're the two that deal with livestock and tillage farmers in this country. And you need to apply to one of them to get licensed as an organic producer. Once you've got your license, then you can apply to join the organic farming scheme that the Department of Agriculture will hopefully launch there within the next few weeks.
Okay. Now, I do know then, Joe, that Chagas are running some courses on organics. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, yes. We're continuously doing 25-hour organic farming principle courses. That's also a requirement for anyone that wants to go farming organically. You have to do a 25-hour Level 6 FITEC approved organic farming principles course. If you join the scheme this year, you will have till September 2022 to do such a course. If anyone is interested in doing one, if they go onto the Chagas website, chagas.ie, and even put in organic courses Chagas into Google, and they'll find the link to it, and you register there and you're put on a waiting list. And as soon as we get enough people in a certain geographical area, we run the courses then according as we get enough people in the provinces. Mainly we run it that way.
Yeah, and tell me this, Joe, what is involved then, you know, during the course, what do prospective organic farmers learn from the course?
Yeah, it's run across. With COVID, it used to be all face to face. With COVID, we've gone online mostly through Zoom. So there's four online sessions, and then the fifth day is a farm walk. On the four online sessions, there's a organic farm principles booklet with eight chapters, where we go through everything from covering the actual organic standards through to kind of an introduction through to the livestock side of things, and there's certain requirements for livestock and crop husbandry. Then we look at going to the detailed look at how to manage the soil and how to use clover to your advantage, and we'll be looking at areas such as soil fertility and other areas mm-hmm. that across the four online sessions. Then on the final day, we try go to a farm because we do tend to get a lot of people from different enterprises coming together. So we kind of horticulture to sheep, to dairy, to beef farmers in the one course. So to try get a farm that maybe encapsulates as many of the practices as possible, just to put the practice into reality and let them see how some of these farmers on the ground are actually using organic to good effect.
Okay. And then looking at the enterprises, I suppose, the easiest one possibly for a farmer to get into would be the beef enterprise.
Yeah, the I suppose you would have a huge percentage of beef farmers that would call themselves almost organic is the term that we'd use,
yeah.
where they would be using very little fertilizer. They'd be stocked modestly enough. And you would imagine that small enough tweaks could get them farming organically. The housing, I suppose, is often one of the biggest things, depending on the farm, that may have to overcome. One of the requirements is that 50% of the floor space has to be straw bedded, and that sometimes is the one that can cause most work with the beef farmers. From a financial point of view, like if you look at the National Farm Survey results that came out there before Christmas, the average suckler farmer is making about 9,000 euros of a profit when you include the single farm payment into things, and with fertilizer prices going where they're going, that profitability is predicted to drop to about 6,000. Now, if you convert that farmer to organics, and if you were to give him or her a 10 or 15% premium on their cattle prices and give them the organic premium, the post, you could potentially double that 6,000 to 12,000. So it is from a financial, economical point of view, it is well worth everyone looking at the sums and just to see, does it make sense for them? Can they make it fit in with their system? And if they're very lowly stocked, it can make sense for an awful lot of people as it is.
And is there help then to that farmer who makes the decision? Is there financial help for the 2 or 3 years it takes to transit from conventional farming to organic farming?
Yes, there is, through the organic farming scheme that the Department of Agriculture runs. So for your typical livestock farmer, they would receive 220 euros per hectare for the first 2 years while they're in conversion. And then after that, they get 170 euros a hectare. That's up to a maximum of 60 hectares. So if it adds up. So the 220 is to kind of allow for you to adjust your farming system and maybe the extra cost that can be incurred while you're adjusting your system. And then the 170 per hectare kicks in once you're fully converted into organics. So it can add up to a nice check in the post.
Okay, and I'd imagine then that the hardest sector to convert would probably be trying to convert a modern dairy farmer to organic.
Yeah, it's I suppose with the conventional dairy price being as strong as it is, and it looks like this spring it'll open at a fairly decent level, so it's fairly profitable for conventional dairy farmers at the moment, and maybe not many would be considering organic while conventional prices are where they are. But the reality is actually that's the best time always to convert to organics is when the conventional price is high. Because if you convert to organics, you're still going to get paid conventional price for your milk for the first 2 years because you're in conversion, so you can't sell your milk as organic until 2 years' time. So if milk price is at opening at 40 something cents a litre, you're still availing of that. And we all know the cyclical nature of milk prices over the last 20, 30 years. They seem to be going up and down in a 3 or 4 year cycle. So converting to organics at the top of that cycle is often is the best time. And, you know, you'll still be, our organic milk prices are very flat. In fairness, they don't seem to go up or down. So maybe they don't go up when the ups come, but they don't go down when the troughs come either. So it's a good way of kind of, it's a great time to convert. I suppose I often say, Jim, that there's 3 or 4 categories of farmers dairy farmers that should be considering organics. The first is the dairy farmers that's lowly stocked.
Yeah.
And they're not spreading much fertilizer at the stands. They have very little tweaking to do to convert to organics, and it might be a natural step for them. So they're the easy ones. The next is the farmer that has probably gone from, let's say, 80 to 120 cows since quotas went, but the cubicles and the slurry storage weren't built at the same pace. And now they're facing a big bill to try get the farmyard right in terms of slurry storage and cubicle spaces. And they could have to spend 200,000-300,000 in the farmyard. And they're saying, if I go organic, go back to my 80 cows, would that make sense? And in a lot of cases, it does. The third category is the farmer. Let's say that's milking 100 cows on 100 acres. And the next thing, 50 acres comes up to lease outside the ditch. They have a choice then. Do I go to 150 cows on 150 acres? Or do I stay at my 100 cows and look at organics as an option? And if you were to go to 150 cows, you have to spend all the bits and bobs that go with that extra 50 cows, cubicles, slurry storage, parlour, everything. The figures that we would have would suggest that could cost you up to 8,000 a cow, which is 400,000 for that farmer extra. So rather than spending that 400,000, would you be better off to look at organics as an option? So that they're a cohort of farmers that I think maybe organics could become an attractive option for them in the next few years. And the fourth category of farmer is the new entrants. A lot of dry stock farmers are looking to get into dairying, and a lot of the co-ops aren't taking on new suppliers, whereas we have organic co-ops that are mad looking for suppliers. And you can get into organic dairying a lot easier than you get into conventional, because you're going to have less cows, you're going to have less cubicles, you're going to have less storage. So your infrastructure costs are lower. So they're another category of farmers that are starting to look at organics. So look, I suppose the key to driving organics in across all the systems in this country is clover, because that's what drives our grass growth and fixes our nitrogen. And we've one of the best climates in Europe and the world for growing clover. So it's actually quite a natural fit to our farming systems. And I think if with the price of fertilizer going the way it is, I think maybe a lot more farmers across all the sectors are really going to sit up and maybe look a bit more closer at the organic option.
Right, Joe. Well, we're going to have to leave it there now for this morning. Thank you ever so much. But just before you go, I suppose just mention the chances of courses coming up during the year and how people should make contact with their local office or on the website.
Yep. So the courses, I suppose we're prioritising any farmer that went into organics last year has to have a course done by the 1st of April. So we're prioritising them for the next 2 months. But if those farmers are out there, I would say just contact your local Chagas advisor as soon as possible so that we can get those courses up and running. We are going to run in a series of webinars locally. So there'll be ones run in your area. Right. There they'll be running across February and March. And at the end of each month, we're also doing a kind of a national webinar looking at various different topics in various sectors. So the one at the end of January will be focusing on the horticultural sector, and the one in February will be focusing more on the beef and sheep side of things. And finally, we have the series of farm demo walks, which will be kicking off probably in March, April, and running through the summer. There'll be 10 walks throughout the summer.
Okay, Joe, thanks a mil for joining us this morning. That listeners was Joe from Chagas talking about organics. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Imelda Walsh, the chairperson of the IFA in North Tipperary. And Imelda's with me this morning because she has news of a postponement of their AGM. Good morning, Imelda. And I presume a lot of my listeners don't know that you are a kind of incapacitated at the moment from a fall that you had at the back end of last year. So we would like, on behalf of all the listeners, to wish you the best of luck and sincerely hope that your recovery, which is, I believe, is going to take some time, that it all goes well.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning to all your listeners. And thank you very much for the good wishes. As you said, I had a fall there at the end of November in London. And I suppose I did it in spectacular fashion. I broke my humerus bone in 15 places and had to have implant surgery done early in December. So I've been told the recovery period is somewhere between 9 and 12 months. But look, we'll get there. But I'm still able to walk and I'm still able to talk. So we'll be fine. We'll manage with the one arm for the intermediate period anyway, Jim.
Well, we're glad anyway, from my perspective, with regard to radio and interviewing you, that they didn't put a place in your jaw that prevented you from talking.
Yes, indeed. That'd be a difficult job, I suppose, to stop me from talking.
I know.
As your listeners are acutely aware, I've no doubt.
And I'm not the only one in Tip FM who's delighted you can still talk. I'm quite sure my colleague Frank Curry is equally delighted that you're still able to talk. But look, we're glad that you're on the road to recovery, and thank you very much for sharing that with us. And I suppose any one of us can fall at any time and do an amount of damage. So we should be a little bit careful, and everybody should be careful with this cold weather we're having this week now, and particularly if yards and sheds and all kinds of places like that are slippy because of ice.
Without a doubt, Jim.
Okay, I said at the beginning you had to postpone your AGM.
Yes, Jim, we had intended having our AGM on next Thursday night, January the 20th, and Anna Mae McHugh from the National Ploughing Association, which all your listeners is familiar with, was our guest speaker, as was our president, Tim Cullinan. But due to the high COVID numbers and everything else, I contacted NME and we have decided to postpone it until February. You know, to be able to have an in-person meeting, and I'm cautiously optimistic that we will be able to do so. We're looking somewhere in the middle of February. I'm just awaiting NME to come back with confirmation of a date to me, because look, we had no ploughing in 2020 or in 2021. And look at us in my discussions with NME, as I outlined to her, for many of us and many farming families, the National Ploughing Championships is our holiday to Lanzarote. You know, it's going there and meeting our friends, repeated friends we've met down through the years and everything else, and for trade stands and for farming families. I think we all look forward every year from, I suppose, July on in anticipation to the ploughing championships. So I just thought this year, the fact that there hadn't been any ploughing for the last 2 years, that it would be appropriate to have NME come and speak to us and outline to us what plans they have for this year's championships, the fact that we haven't had any open to the public for the last 2 years, and I suppose just tell us how it has been for them. And, you know, I suppose the disappointment for them also in relation to organising and then having to postpone and watching as COVID numbers increased and unfortunately having to cancel. So I'm absolutely delighted that she has agreed to come to speak with our members at our AGM. So we're looking forward in anticipation to NMA's attendance in February. And as I say, Jim, I am cautiously optimistic that we will be able to have an in-person meeting at this moment in time.
Okay, and I suppose the announcement by the Taoiseach on Friday that they're easing the restrictions with regard to the time people have to isolate, that will definitely have an effect on your plans. So an effect on the bright side, not an effect on the dark side.
Without a shadow of a doubt, Jim, and even looking at the news earlier in the week was saying that from, I think, Wednesday evening, was it, Jim, that they were saying, Catherine Martin was saying in relation to closing times of 8 o'clock, that, you know, that she was hopeful that come the beginning of February that will change. So I am cautiously optimistic that will change and will allow us to have an in-person meeting and, you know, and for people to be able to come and to listen to NMA McHugh and to meet their friends from other branches and everything else. Our last year's meeting was virtual, was online. We had a very, very good meeting with Minister Simon Coveney on the night, but I would be hopeful and I look forward in anticipation to be able to meet our members in person at our AGM, which I think is a hugely important meeting. You know, many people come to the AGM that perhaps don't attend other meetings, and many people look at the rather in-person meetings rather than the virtual ones online and everything else. So we await in anticipation to further announcements and easing of restrictions, Jim, in the coming weeks. Look, it's only the middle of January and things seem to be going, while the numbers are high, the amount of people being very unwell with COVID is quite low. So we have reason to be optimistic, Jim.
Okay, and of course, Imelda, you let us know on Tip FM when you have a definite date and we'll be able to get that out to the farmers of North Tipperary.
Without a doubt, Jim, without a doubt. Thank you, Jim.
Okay, Imelda, other issues that are out there at the moment, I presume maybe we'd be as well off say a few words about safety, because...
Exactly, Jim. I'm delighted that you brought up that, because that's where I was going to go to next with you, was saying that with farm safety, look, obviously the slurry days opened there on Thursday, so many farmers will be out spreading slurry and agitating. And I suppose, look, at agitating those toxic gases, and we see and hear every year of fatalities due to, we say, agitating of slurry and spreading of slurry. And I'm just asking farming families out there today, Jim, to be very, very mindful. And, you know, even to take out your stock out, of conditions at the moment are very, very calm. Mm-hmm. To take your cattle or your cows out of sheds when agitating, and if possible, have somebody with you. And not to be going into the sheds to check, is the slurry agitating well halfway up the house? Because though in those few seconds, Jim, that can be enough for somebody to lose consciousness and to, you know, to smother and be poisoned from those gases. So look at it, it's the time of the year when farmers are starting to get extremely busy again. You know, look at it's coming up near calving season again. And look at, we all know a cow when she's calving, how agitated she may become, you know, and upset when as she's pinchy calves and everything else. And just be mindful and to have the correct calving safety gates in place, and to be very, very mindful around stock and everything else. And now in these weeks, just before we start to get really busy, now is the time to put in the preparation to check and ensure that all the safety features that are necessary in aiding calving are in place. And likewise with lambing ewes and everything else, to have all the measures that are needed, we'll say, you know, your calving roofs, your calving jacks, etc., you know, and all the things associated with it. It's now, when we have a little bit of time, I can't emphasise enough, Jim, in relation to farm safety. And it's, you know, and you mentioned there at the start, like trips and slips and everything else, because we're coming to a time of the year when we are more likely to have frost and everything else, and yards can be slippy, and you can be going there with a couple of buckets in your hand, and quite simple, something can happen. And for many of us, like we are farming on our own, so we certainly need to look after ourselves and to ensure that our farms are a safe place. So now is a good time to go around and have a check around the farm to ensure that all the safety measures are in place on your farm.
Okay, and I suppose we have to welcome the fact that farm fatalities in 2021, you know, went down by 50%, to be correct. So that's a good sign, and let's hope we can bring it down by another 50% or more in 2022.
Without a shadow of a doubt, Jim, and they were fatalities, but there was a lot of accidents, we'll say, where people were seriously injured, we'll say, in that. And we don't have the stats on those, and there's quite an amount of people out there that would have been injured in farm accidents, you know, that maybe with limbs or whatever, we'll say, in that. And, you know, they're not in a position to farm, or maybe have had to make modifications on their farm in order to enable them to farm. So it's just that you couldn't be careful enough. And to me, any number of farm fatalities is a number that's too high, and we can all do better, and we must strive to do better. And we can become overly familiar, Jim, with our own farmyards, and that's always the danger, because sometimes, you know, it's a strange pair of eyes that come into our farm, our neighbour, whoever, they can see a potential danger that perhaps we don't notice on our own farm. And I know last year we'd say a number of, we'd say, you know, farm safety days, that was done in a number of areas, we'll say, where, you know, we went around to different farms and just pointing it out. And it's actually a good exercise, we'll say, in that. Like, and it's not somebody coming in being critical, it's somebody coming in highlighting a danger that they see on your farm that you may, because you're overly familiar with your farmyard, may not even notice.
Well, look at Imelda, that will do us for this week. Again, I wish you a speedy recovery, and I sincerely hope that you get a date around mid-February for your AGM. And of course, we should mention that the national AGM is taking place at the end of the month.
It is. It's taking place on the 27th of January. Mm. That's penciled into the diary at the moment. We are hoping it's going to be an in-person meeting, but we will need to wait and see how things progress over the next week and so. But we are hopeful that it can be an in-person meeting, Jim.
Okay. Listeners, that was Imelda Walsh, the chairperson of the IFA in North Tipperary, giving us some up-to-date news with regard to matters pertaining to the IFA here in the county. Listeners, I spoke to Paul Smith from the Irish Creamy Milk Suppliers Association last week, if you had been tuned in. And Paul is back with me again this week, and we're going to talk about some of the farm schemes that are out there that are run by the Department of Agriculture and what they're going to look like this year and maybe into the future. We'll try to look into a crystal ball to see what will morph out of them for 2023 onwards. And as I mentioned last week, Paul is a development officer with the ICMSA. Good morning, Paul, and thanks again for joining us.
Good morning, Jim, and very happy to be on the show again.
Let's talk about the schemes you're going to start off with.
I'm going to start off with the basic payment scheme, which is obviously one of the most important schemes for all farmers out there. And I suppose the usual, this 2022 is the last year of the current cap having been extended in 2021 and 2022 before the new cap scheme comes into place in 2023. So this year's basic payment will be similar to last year's in terms of there's going to be no real changes compared to what will be coming in place in 2023.
Okay, so much the same. And what's going to happen that, or what's likely to happen that next year in 2023 when the new cap kicks in?
Well, it's all changed, really,
right,
Jim. There's going to be new names to the schemes. So the basic payment scheme will no longer be known as that. It'll be known as the Basic Income Support for Sustainability, a bit of a mouthful. That's replacing your BPS and your greening payments that are currently on offer, and it's going to be quite a substantial change for a lot of people, because there's also an eco scheme built into Pillar 1 in 2023, whereby you'll have to undertake some kind of options. And there's currently 10 options that are being provisionally out there in terms of the CAP strategic plan, and This is going to be a new venture for farmers in terms of Pillar 1 payments compared to previous CAP.
You're really referring now to that we are going to have to be using more clovers, more multi-species grasses, and some of the other measures that we're talking about will be maybe planting a few trees here and new hedgerows, etc. Is that the type of greening that you see happening in the next CAP?
Yes, indeed. There's under the eco scheme proposals in the CAP strategic plan that has been submitted to the Commission in the last month by the Department, there is 10 options available for farmers to do it. There's space for nature, which means that you have to have 7% of your land devoted to biodiversity habitats or landscape features. There's extensive livestock production, and that's where you qualify for that. Your livestock units has to be up to proposed 1.5 livestock units per hectare. There's also the limiting of chemical nitrogen usage, the planting of native trees, and the usage of GPS-controlled fertilizer spreaders.
Are you saying that at the moment that a farmer picks one of those in any given year, or can he?
Yeah, he'll have to pick two of those options. There's other options as well. There's crop diversification and the sowing of multi-species swaths in addition. So the applicant will have to pick two of those choices in order to qualify for this eco scheme payment. So it will be there will be options there, but they are going to be rigorous in some cases to get those options.
And you're saying that the aim is that you bring everybody up to 7% of their total land usage area?
Yeah, that's one of the options. Mm-hmm. So up to 7% to qualify for one part of it. There is a proposal that if you have 10%, that you'd actually be okay for the full eco scheme payment. That would cover you for two options if you had 10%.
Right, okay. I heard the minister talking about that 7%, all right, at a meeting he had prior to Christmas in Thurles, and I thought it was interesting. Moving on then from that, what other scheme do you want to talk about this morning with me, Paul?
I suppose under the current BPS and schemes that are in place this year. There's obviously, it's important to make sure you get all your ducks in a row in terms of getting your land, your parcels in, and making sure if there's any transfer of entitlements, if you're leasing land, making sure you've all those in order before the mid-May deadline for this year, because it will be important, given that there's going to be changes to the nitrates, that every hectare that you have that could be eligible land that is included in your BPS, because it makes a difference in your nitrates calculations for 2022. So that's quite important. The other important thing is your areas of natural constraint. Okay, so if you are, or if you do have land that is ANC, or as used to be known, the disadvantaged land, that you tick the box when you're submitting your payment for this year. Now, obviously, if you have an agent who is doing the work for you online, that they will do that as a matter of course.
Yeah, but you'd have to inform them to be sure they tick the box for you. That's equally as important. Talking about the ICMSA and ICMSA news during the week, of course, you lost a very prominent ICMSA man during the week.
Oh, Tom Farley, yes, indeed.
Tom Farley.
We lost Tom, who worked in the office for a number of decades. Tom was a great man. He came in and worked his way up through the organisation, and while I didn't have the pleasure of working with him, he often called into the office, obviously pre-COVID times, and yeah, he was a great man for ICMSA.
Yeah, he did fantastic work, and I read a piece that Cahill wrote about him, and I thought he was very kind to him, and very appreciative of all the work that he had done for ICMSA down through the years. And of course, it is always a sad day for an organisation when somebody of his calibre happens to pass away.
Absolutely, you know, it came as a big shock to all of us in the organisation and in the office to learn of his death.
Oh, okay. Any other ICMSA news for this week that we should be looking out for?
No, I suppose we're currently we're in the midst of planning for the year in terms of bits and pieces that we'll be doing. We'll be holding more online webinars in the course of next month or so. So we'll keep you updated on those as they come through.
Okay, well, we'll talk about those webinars so that we can, you know, I know the Teagasc had one webinar this week that was should have been, and I didn't get an opportunity to join in on it, but one with regard to the use of slurry for 2022, given the price of nitrogen, and I'm quite sure that you'll have equal good webinars during the year to help out, and we'll try to keep those posted on this program. So look at Paul for this morning. Look at, thanks very much for joining us and sharing that with us, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks a million, Jim, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
That, listeners, was Paul Smith from the Irish Cream and Milk Suppliers Association. Listeners, as I said at the beginning of the programme, that my final guest this morning would be Tommy Heffernan. And Tommy is a veterinary surgeon. And Tommy is joining us to talk about probiotics and a very interesting subject, I can assure you. Good morning, Tommy, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim. It's great to be on board, and hello to all your listeners. I suppose it's the calm before the storm, and a lot of farms out there, certainly, Jim, as we approach yet another springtime.
Oh, of course it is. And by the way, big congratulations to the Kerry Hurlers for beating Tipperary. But on a more serious note, would you ever tell me a little bit about who Tommy Heffernan is?
Well, you mentioned Kerry Hurlers there. I'm a Kerry man originally, Jim. I was in vet practice in Wicklow for 16 and a half years, where I was involved in a practice up there, mixed practice. I got very interested in farming, preventative and animal health. And since 2017, I've been working consultant, actually training vets, working with farmers. I spent a bit of time in the Farmer's Journal as well. So part of my work is, I suppose, looking at research, what's new, what's coming, what are the challenges. And I get to work on exciting projects like the one we're going to talk about this morning, which is these unique liquid probiotics and postbiotics coming from an Irish company, Jim.
Right. And did you enjoy your time with the journal? We have a lot of journal people on these programmes down to the every year.
Yeah, great time with Farmers Journal. Great experience. I mean, I went from veterinary practice to, I suppose it's journalism. Now, my English wasn't great and my knowledge and enthusiasm was vast. But, I learned so much about communication and I suppose the greater scale of agriculture as well and some of the challenges there. And I got to work with great people, first and foremost, you know.
Rightio. Now, let's turn to the main subject, and that is probiotics. Okay, a lot of my listeners will probably only know it by name. So maybe you would tell me what we can expect from probiotics in the coming years.
Yeah, well, so it's an area I've got interested in, but I suppose from the work that I've seen working with this Irish company, Precision Microbes. And essentially, there would be a lot of talk about how important gut health is in humans and animals. You know, it's well recognised now that our digestive systems are key to health. And particularly on farms, we know it in young animals like calves. And when we talk about gut health, there's more and more information around beneficial microbes and bacteria in our gut. So we often talk about viruses and bacteria, they were all bad. But in fact, a lot of them are very beneficial and very important to our health. So in our digestive tracts, when we think about bacteria, good bacteria play three key roles. And the same in calves and pets, horses and ourselves. They play a role in digestive health and function, which is very important. 70% of our immunity is in the digestive tract. And they also provide protection against other pathogens and pests. And when we think about using probiotics or beneficial microbes or beneficial bacteria, we're trying to enhance gut health. And that's what Precision Microbes are doing with their products, Jim, is they're using live beneficial probiotic bacteria in a liquid medium. And they're also in that medium is a thing called postbiotics, which is the really important piece of the jigsaw and why they're unique. And what we're doing with calves is we're helping gut health. We're really helping recovery from scour. And I suppose it's been a very exciting journey for me. I've been very focused on maybe cattle work over the last couple of years and training. But I've got to go back across species, actually, looking at some of the results here with these. And it's been a very, very exciting 12 months. And I suppose, you know, especially being an Irish company, I think it's a name to watch out for because they're really starting to get a bit of a name across, just not in Ireland, but across Europe now as well.
Yeah, tell us a bit about the company themselves, though. Being an Irish company, we're always, I suppose we'd like to blow our trumpets when an Irish company comes up with something good, because I suppose one of the great Irish companies that responded to a crisis would have been Enfer with regard to BSE at the time, and that was rampant across, particularly in the UK.
So Ireland Precision Microbes, I suppose timing is good as well, because we would all know that we're trying to reduce antibiotic usage. In another week's time or 10 days' time, there'll be legislation change at a European level that's going to really affect, you know, the usage. So having products like these available with science and delivering results is really important. And they're a piece of the jigsaw. They're a company who started life on the plant side of it, actually, and at a very high-end fine turf industry. You can read about them online. But they have customers all over Europe. And they took out these insecticides and fungicides from pitches in the Premier League and football and rugby pitches. And they used it, microbes, good bacteria, which actually play a role not just in animals' guts and our own digestive tracts. They play a role in soil health, Jim, which is really interesting. So they started there. They worked with a number of scientists, and the vision was always to go into the animal health industry, refine their science. And they're still very much involved in the plant world as well. They're based in the Nall County, Dublin, set up by two Irish people, John Paul Innes and Paul Keneally. So, yeah, I get to work in my role with a lot of both on farm, training and with companies. And I think I'm around a long time. I was very lucky to travel globally as well. And they're a really exciting company with exciting products, not just the ones that are available, with some really nice research coming along as well that I'm involved with trials with them. So it's very exciting.
Getting back, I suppose, then to the product and in particular, you know, is this a product that's easy to use and that be incorporated into the normal daily life of a farmer, particularly once he has to manually or with a machine of some description, you know, an automatic feeder for calves or whatever the farmer would have. Is it easy to
administer? I suppose. So administer. So when we look at the role of probiotics in gut health, we have a couple of different uses that the farmers will be using. It's actually available. Products available through your local veterinary shop. It's quite unique and it's licensed under veterinary supervision. So we've done a huge amount of work, and I spent a week this week out with vet practices, talking to them, training, looking at applications, and making sure people are comfortable. And I suppose there's three reasons it'll be used. It's licensed for, you know, you have a calf with diarrhea or scour and you need to get, you know, its gut is damaged from the pathogen. And what we want, stabilization, which means return to normal function. That gut repairs itself. And it's just a liquid drench. It's a liquid bottle and it can be administered orally, twice daily for 3 days. And it can go in milk as well. So that's where some farmers would be using it, Jim, certainly. Where we're seeing it being used with calves, is obviously farms are getting bigger. It's not just one calf, unfortunately, gets calf diarrhea or scour. It'll be a group of calves. And we're often looking at those group of calves and we might be rehydrating them. But now we have something we can put in through the milk with these calves that can be fed once a day for 4 to 5 days. And it's helping return to normal function. And there's one thing I saw with these products, and farmers and vets are telling me, is the speed of action. Is there, you know, sometimes with probiotics, do they work? Don't they work? With this unique liquid, because it's live probiotics and postbiotics, we're seeing a very, very quick response. Okay, so ideally then what really, I suppose, these products were designed for, and the future, I think, will be around. We all know, and I suppose my career has been very focused on prevention. How do we prevent disease? How do we promote health? Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about disease now, and you know, we've had 19, 20 months of a pandemic, but what can we do to make calves healthier? And that's where I suppose I see the use of these products long term is, you know, be through your automatic feeder or through milk that the calves get it from a young age to support better gut health, meaning they're going to see less scours, less use for antibiotics and more resistance to disease. And that's a story that I'm seeing, I suppose, evolve through veterinary practice and with farmers out on the ground at the moment, Jim. So very, very exciting.
Right, of course, if this works as good as you say it is, and I'm quite sure I'm not going to argue with you because I'm definitely not a veterinary surgeon and I'm definitely not a chemist, you'll drive your colleagues in the veterinary practice out of business?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, we're always going to have sick animals, you know. And I think, look, we know, and I know in jest there, you're stirring the pot, but we know that we're always going to have sick animals. We're trying to look at animals, healthy animals, or productive animals, and on farm that means a profitable animal. It means better welfare, and it's a better result for everyone because there's nothing more demoralizing. In the springtime when you're busy to have calf diarrhea, calf scour. We don't want to lose animals. We don't want to be treating animals. So I think it's a win for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's something that certainly I've been, I suppose, very happy with to see the engagement from veterinary practices up and down the country, colleagues, friends. And, you know, it's a new way of thinking. It's a new way of, and certainly when the products, it's not a miracle cure, but when these products are used correctly, they're extremely effective, Jim.
Yeah, and of course it's another weapon in tool of the farmer, given, as you quite rightly said at the top of the programme, you know, at the top of this interview, that, you know, with the withdrawal of antibiotics, we need to have some other tool that replaces it or at least is there to help the farmer, I suppose, make more money, keep his calves alive, etc. So this is a good tool.
Yeah, no, good tool. And like I would say to farmers all day long as well, I have 6 rules with calves. It's good colostrum, feeding that, feeding milk, feeding enough of it, fresh air, good calf comfort, plenty focus on hygiene, and give calves space. They're still the important foundations, as I described, being brilliant at the basics. They're the things that will deliver the main results. And the microbes and probiotic postbiotics are tools in the armour to help us on that journey.
Okay. Can you give me the product name now for all my listeners here in Tipperary?
Yeah, so it's Precision Microbes, Calf, Pro and Postbiotic Liquid Solutions, available through your veterinary practitioner. There's products for equine products and companion animal products in the range as well that are available for people that are getting great feedback. So it's Precision Microbes, calf, pro and postbiotic liquids is the one to watch out for, Jim. And thanks very much for having the conversation and discussion.
Yeah, and you could have mentioned that it's also available for small animals like doggies, because I'd have a lot of listeners who would be not necessarily farming, but would have a pet dog. So if the old dog wasn't feeling great, it would help him as well.
Yeah, it's a massive product as well. And we're seeing huge results across the companion animals, the dogs and cats, Jim. So, yeah.
Okay, well, look at Tommy. Thanks very much for joining us. And we wish you and company the best of luck. And I'm quite sure, as I said, I think it's just another tool in the armour for the farmer to have. That, listeners, was Tommy Heffernan, a veterinary surgeon, telling us about probiotics and their use in farming and their use for, we'd say, anybody who has small animals. And that, listeners, is Ag Report for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll join me, Jim Finn, at the same time next week for another Ag Report on Tip FM. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock. And after that, Eamon Dwyer presents Down Your Way.